Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show. My name is Gary Ornstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show, and with me today co-hosting is Edgard Kaptiviel from the Cloud Strategy Group.
Hi, Gary. Edgard.
And we're also really pleased to have David Patterson as our guest today. David is a professor in computer science at UC Berkeley and director of the Rad Lab. Welcome, David.
Hi, Gary.
So we're going to start off with some industry news and then move into some specific discussions. One of the big topics for us, of course, is the paper that the Rad Lab recently introduced titled Above the Clouds. But we'll get to that in a few moments. Wanted to just cover a few recent events. One was on Friday. There was a big TechCrunch cloud computing event. It had a phenomenal roster. Actually, I think most of the people on the roster of the cloud computing event are also partners of the Rad Lab, but folks from Salesforce.com, Google, Microsoft, Sun, Yahoo, FriendFeed, Amazon, Facebook, Ning, and Rackspace. So, I don't think they could have invited anybody else to round out the panel. You know, a few cheap shots between the panels, but not really anything brand new. The one thing that stood out, from my opinion, was that Mark Benioff from Salesforce.com still says that the fight is between the old model of buying software and the cloud models. Eric Schoenfeld, who was moderating, said you could stop beating up on Siebel. But Benioff says he loses way more deals to the traditional software models than to competing against cloud vendors. Yeah. So one of the things I thought we could just discuss for a moment is where do you see the battles, David or Edgard? Are we really fighting sort of cloud computing versus traditional box software, or is the fight amongst the cloud computers, the cloud computing providers, relevant as well?
Well, when there's new technologies, over my career, there's kind of two ways you can do it. You can, all the new technologies you guys can fight amongst themselves, or you can gang up together and decide it's the new versus the old. Usually in the stuff that I've done, we've ganged together. The new guys have all ganged together and tried to change things, because it's really hard to change, a technology. There's inertia, there's people know that are its strengths and weaknesses. It's really hard to get people to try new things. So I would urge people to work together against the old.
Probably bigger fish to fry, which is the way he puts it.
I think it also has to do with the maturity, right? So you have low-level cloud computing providers and you have high-level cloud computer providers, the high-level being a lot more mature. For example, I think the next day after the TechCrunch event, Salesforce posted quarterly earnings. And they closed their first $1 billion year. Mm-hmm. So they've officially become a mid-sized company. and it's clearly an inflection point for that higher level, more mature side of cloud computing, which is the software as a service category. I think the lower layers or the lower levels of cloud computing are a lot less mature. And therefore, you compete even more with traditional infrastructure. There's a lot more risk. I think Mark and his company have reached a maturity and an evolution level where he can stop fighting with Siebel and start looking at the next rev, right, or the next generation.
But he says that most of the fights are against Siebel, right? We get very perhaps myopic in that the real battle is between Amazon and Google and newcomers, and maybe it isn't. So we'll have to see.
I think I'd agree with Benioff on this.
Yeah, it was important for him to bring the very Silicon Valley tech-centric circle back to the reality of mainstream corporate purchases. Elsewhere in the news, VMware had the VMware Europe, a big show there, and they announced a lot of their new cloud offerings. There's details for some stories that we'll link to in the show notes. But I think the question I had is the OS relevant anymore, given that people seem to be able to choose Linux, Windows, something else with a mouse click away? You can download, I think, pretty much any image you want on EC2. Does the OS matter? Any thoughts there?
Well, I thought the VMware announcement was more of a lot of useful services that a lot of operating systems could use on top of VMware. So I don't know that it's which operating system you run matters. Well, it matters to some people, right? A bunch of people depend on Windows for the services that they use. So I assume for those people, the OS matters.
Yeah. It just seems to me that more and more as these virtualization options come to fore, given that you can run any OS, it's restricting that control point that was so strong 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that. I think for VMware, it's really a matter of charting a strategy and articulating that. We'll see actually if VMware does become the default platform of choice for the very large cloud computing providers.
I do like what the new CEO is doing. It's a significant change from the previous regime, and specifically trying to develop a platform for cloud, a virtualization platform for cloud with the right services in that virtualization layer. I think it's great. But I do think that the OSs are going to continue to be relevant because there are several aspects of computing that are not solved at the virtualization layer but belong to the OS layer. Application high availability is one example. If it's not solved at the application level or detectable at the virtualization layer, then the OS is the one in charge of providing high availability. So that's one example that I could think of.
Yeah. So other big news, you know, both of the major networking players made announcements recently that have at least put everybody on their toes. One from Cisco is this so-called Project California. It's no longer a mystery that they're going to be doing something in the server space. Exactly what that is, you know, only a few of the insiders actually know. The rest of the world is guessing. I was at a conference on Wednesday around data center technologies, and certainly that was a question on everybody's minds, what do we think Cisco will do? One of the big questions is there value to be added in the server market anymore? It's a huge market dominated by giants, and is there something new that Cisco can pull out of a hat to charge margins that company is used to, perhaps, you know, significantly higher than others? Any thoughts or ideas there?
I think the whole Project California is really what do you call it? Episode 2 of the VMware partnership. I was able to experience some of the early forays into a partnership with VMware from the storage side. On the storage side, Cisco and VMware partnered to help with SAN mobility and SAN integration in a virtualized world, how to, you know, virtual connectivities to a SAN follow a virtual machine in a blade server type of environment. And that was very successful to differentiate the MDS infrastructure, which is their fiber channel product. I think this new partnership is going to be very similar. It's going to be about how do we differentiate Cisco and the new Cisco servers around integrations associated with data center Ethernet, for example, which is a key Cisco technology that they want to have dominate the market. And I think having that tight integration between a real-time Java OS in a server with pre-installed and pre-configured VMware, and also having tight integration with, say, data center Ethernet technologies would provide perhaps enough differentiation to have them, you know,
yeah,
have a chance.
Yeah, for me, it's and I may have mentioned this before on an earlier show, is if you believe that virtualization is going to be paramount and everywhere and all over the place, and if you believe that virtual machine mobility is important, which I think is another leap that might not be as easy as the first, then I think there's an opportunity for a lot of value add in the network to facilitate, manage, administer, track, monitor, report all of that migration and mobility of virtual machines. But it's a long way to go from where we are today to that happening. So we'll see. That'll certainly be a big announcement when we hear the details of Project California. Perhaps in order not to lose the spotlight entirely to Cisco, Juniper announced their Stratus project. I just pulled out a quote from one of the articles, I believe, on InfoWorld. The Juniper Stratus project comprises six elements: a data center manager, storage, compute, layer 4 to 7 switching, appliances, and networking. And so my question is, is it going to sweep the floor, data center floor, for you as well if it's doing all of that? I don't know if there's enough details around the Juniper Stratus project to talk about it at this point, but it is interesting that, you know, these two networking giants are figuring their way into the market here. The last big item that I wanted to bring up for news is Ubuntu and their cloud computing release, which isn't coming until October. I guess they do two major releases each year, one in April, one in October. So this is perhaps a little bit of a pre-announcement. But their going to be supporting Amazon EC2 in that release, as well as embedding Eucalyptus, the open source platform for computing. And I think this is pretty significant in that it appears like EC2 support is becoming a standard feature almost everywhere you turn in the server, desktop, notebook, netbook market. I saw that HP's media server is now supporting S3 as well. And then one question I had for us on the Eucalyptus side is people talk about Eucalyptus allowing people to build essentially an EC2-like infrastructure. At that point, which way does the traffic flow? Do people build things on Eucalyptus internally and then migrate into the cloud, or are people going to take stuff that's in the cloud and decide, you know what, I want to bring this in-house? So, Dave, from your perspective, which way do you think the traffic is going to flow kind of services?
First of all, we commented about this announcement on our blog site, the Above the Clouds blog site at Berkeley. We thought this was a nice step of one of the things we think is important is standardizing APIs. We use Eucalyptus internally. We run it on our own internal cluster. We use it for doing experiments here locally. We have like a 40-node cluster and then go up and scale up in the cloud. Some of the things we want to do, we'd like to get more details, measuring stuff than is available from EC2 S3.
Can you give an example of like a type of detail?
Because of the virtualization layer, there's only so much you can figure out what's going on. So timing information, we're also kind of interested in.
Latency between nodes, is that what
you
say?
Yeah, latency between nodes, timing how long things really take on a machine, because you're on this virtualized instance there, and some of the measurement stuff doesn't work as well in the virtualized environment as it does in the real machine. We are interested. Let's see, what else?
I don't think locality is yet built into EC2 yet. That you can't
in terms of allocation and things like that.
Right. I mean, there are people. There are appliances and software models that really depend on a very tight coupling of the network and the bandwidth and within the same rack and so forth. And then there's others that have sort of a looser model.
And so, I think a question there is then how important is all that? Right? Is how bad is it when you don't put things in the same rack that are really running together? And so that's one of the things we're interested in supporting. I think we also mentioned this thing in our Above the Clouds report about what we call surge computing, whereas you'd be running the same APIs and using things like S3 locally so that when at crunch time you could go up into the cloud. So at least our take of it would be Eucalyptus would be this thing that would allow you to offload more into the cloud than you do today.
I think that ties really well with the very first article we discussed, because one of the things I thought when I read this Ubuntu piece was that it was competitive with the Cloud OS initiative from the perspective of VMware wants to introduce the Cloud OS as a way to standardize virtualization platforms among enterprises and their service providers so that they can do search compute to those service providers when that made sense. So I see a parallel between Ubuntu being competitive with VMware in terms of trying to define two different standards for the standardized platforms that are required for search computing. And I think it's great for the industry because the only way cloud computing is going to grow in evolution adoption is going to be with this set of standards.
Yeah, we say in the report, a lot of, especially industry side, concerns are being worried about business continuity. And if your cloud, if there's only one cloud to go to and everybody has their own APIs, every single instance is different. You know, it's harder to see that as many companies will get involved as if it's more standardization. And like you said, this Ubuntu thing endorsing EC2 and S3 seems to be a step in some standardization around that level.
And I think there's a third component here that is a hidden benefit, I think, because once you are able to do surge computing and you have this standardized platform, an interesting thing happens. Back from my consulting days, you can actually start to do true benchmarking. The compute running in your facility and the compute running in your specialized service provider, you can now measure the availability on both machines with the exact same metric that you couldn't do before. You can measure greenness, you can measure power consumption, efficiencies. Benchmarking does funny things to processes, and I think there's even more proof that we're at an inflection point in the industry. Adding benchmarking, having this standardized platform that enables surge computing is going to do marvels for the evolution of cloud computing, I think, just from being able to measure it. Once you're able to measure it, the obvious thing is just to improve it.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I still believe that while a lot of the discussion about eucalyptus is positioned as an on-ramp to the cloud, I still think there's going to be an off-ramp.
No, well, look, for the off-ramp to be, why is everybody excited about cloud computing? It's not because of the APIs. It's not, oh my God, what a wonderful API. What's people excited about cloud computing is the elasticity, the fact that we, even as a university, can do experiments with 1,000 nodes at something we can afford is astounding. And we don't have to buy 1,000 machines and put them up for a year. So there's strong reasons people are excited about cloud computing. The fact that you can imitate the same APIs in your own local computing with all the provisioning problems and maintenance and support problems that that entails, I don't think this is the death knell of cloud computing. I think it's the other
Yeah, and I don't think it's the death knell either. I think that there are cases, you know, there's, and some people have done the math, you know, if you rent an EC2 instance for 24/7/365, how much is it going to cost versus if you bought a server and you didn't have it powered up all the time? And I just think it'll make the economics perhaps more to Edgar's point of benchmarking, and you can see the real numbers. I'm just not 100% sure that traffic's only going to go in. I think it might perhaps lead to an opportunity to pull some out. But
well, you'll just have to come back. And
we'll have to come back.
In 2 years or a year and see if that's true.
We'll see if that's true. Great. So let's segue into our guest Q&A section because we're really pleased to have Dave here. So first, maybe let's step back a little bit. And the RAD Lab, the acronym stands for Reliable Adaptive Distributed Systems Laboratory. Tell us a little bit about the mission of the organization and your involvement.
So our nature at Berkeley is to do these five-year projects. We see exciting technology trends and try and put a team together to take advantage of that opportunity. So for this one, 3 years ago, we said it'd be pretty interesting if we could create the technology that would let one person create the next eBay. And not only create an eBay over the weekend like it was created, but actually for it to be able to scale up to the size of an eBay today without having to build a company the size of eBay. So can a single person invent and operate and scale up the idea was our premise. The good news was, especially given the funding climate of the last administration, another part of the experiment was to see if industry would be capable of funding this, would be willing to fund it. So we had three major founding supporters in Google, Microsoft, and Sun Microsystems. And many people were surprised that both Google and Microsoft would cooperate on something like that. So that was the two pieces of it.
Right. And you've been with the Rad Lab since its formation?
Yeah. Well, I've been at Berkeley forever,
right.
30-some years. This is, you know, we do these five-year projects pretty regularly.
But is the Rad Lab the five-year project, or is...
Yeah, the Rad Lab's the five-year project is the elevator pitch is we started 3 years ago, and we're pretty much on path to being able to take some Berkeley undergraduate and let him come up with some great idea and scale it up to, you know, millions of users and things like that.
Now, 3 years ago, cloud computing was nowhere in
right.
the vocabulary and terminology as it is today. How much of the, you know, it doesn't sound like your mission has changed at all, but what has the general climate of cloud computing done to intermix with the mission and vice versa?
Well, yeah, I'm a storyteller, so if I tell the stories, kind of as technologists, you have to try and see trends coming and decide to take advantage of them. And the analogy I use is surfing, having grown up in Southern California. When surfing is, you kind of look in the horizon, you see a little swell, and then you decide if you start paddling. And if it's a good wave, it'll build up and you catch it. And if it's a bad wave, you paddle like heck and you don't catch it. So if you're catching a wave that looks good, the further you're on the wave, the better it should get. So for us, one of the questions we didn't know the answer to is, okay, great, this guy comes up with this idea, and you create the software, and he builds the prototype, and starts to scale. Where is he going to get all the hardware? That seems like a stumbling block. So fortunately for us, you know, the cloud computing thing kind of emerged at the same time we were doing the project, so that was a good sign. Another good thing for us has been the popularity of Rails, or Ruby on Rails. So the first thing we started is, well, we're going to have to invent our own programming environment. But, you know, the Ruby environment has a, you know, really highly productive characteristic. So this is a good sign. And as one of the people from Microsoft said it, after 3 years in treatment. I can't believe it, 3 years into this research project, and you're still on track to be able to deliver this mission. So
that's great. So fill us in on the paper that was released recently. The title is Above the Clouds, a Berkeley View on Cloud Computing, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. How did that get started?
Well, I'm involved with another effort here on parallel computing, and about multi-core and mini-core. And a few years ago, we met for a couple of years talking about that issue. And at the end, we didn't know what to do, so we wrote a technical report, maybe 30, 40 pages, and put it out there. And it was incredibly popular, which was surprising for us as academics. There was no refereeing. There was no, there was no stamp of approval by a major journal or anything. But we sent it out to lots of people whose opinion we respected and got feedback and put it out there, and it was just caught on like gangbusters. And so as we started getting excited about the cloud computing thing, we wondered if there'd be another opportunity for us to do a longer piece of paper, a longer like a white paper on this topic and put it out there. So that was the genesis of the idea. And about just exactly 6 months ago, we met in this room to start hashing out the ideas, reading papers, reading blogs, and seeing, trying to make sense of what was going on out there.
Mm-hmm. So it's been out for 2 or 3 weeks now, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit more. How has the feedback varied from the academic community, the commercial community, other things in the blogosphere?
Well, it's been tremendous. We had 19,000 downloads of our technical report in the first day. So this was a good sign. And as the comments that have been out there have been, very warm the cockles of our hearts. A lot of a pretty common comment is, geez, I've been reading all these things, and this is some of the same reaction. And it just seemed like a lot of hype out there. And I couldn't, what are they talking about? And I understand why. And there was a lot of almost thank yous of trying to clarify a lot of terminology and what are the major trends that are going on. So that was nice. There are some people who, didn't feel like we had adopted their point of view. And so they didn't think our paper was quite as wonderful. particularly about the one thing we noticed most frequently was whether or not internal data centers were part of cloud computing or not. We thought carefully about that. And I actually became officially a blogger today by posting my comment on.
Can you give us a quick summary of that comment?
Yeah, well, we quote, Larry Ellison in the report as saying, geez, you guys have defined cloud computing to be everything. So there's nothing there. We don't have to do anything different. We just stick cloud computing in our ads and we're done. And we think this is actually a relatively simple problem, is just being imprecise in the definition. A reason to include internal data centers is, internal data centers, like we're talking about Eucalyptus, they can adopt some of the APIs. They have many of the characteristics. You could operate an internal data somewhat like the way Amazon operates AWS. And so by that definition, well, why isn't that cloud computing? What the problem is when you do that, is suddenly people can't tell what cloud computing is and what it isn't. One. Two, it's really hard to come up with the definition. If you're going to do that, then clearly some internal data centers are cloud computing and some aren't. Okay, good luck coming up with a clear definition that makes that demarcation and everybody agrees on it. And I think the other part, and I think a lot of people worry about trying to work on that. The problem is, even if you do that, the problem is then the generalizations that we make about cloud computing, which apply to these big places, don't apply to the internal data centers. So then you'll make these claims, like we make these claims of 5 to 7 improvement in cost, which I think we can document for the Amazons and the Microsofts and the Googles of the world. But if you throw in internal data centers there, what was the magic sauce that suddenly I have all these people who work here, I bought all this equipment, I have this machine room, I start running the Eucalyptus API, and suddenly I save a factor of 5 or 7, right? Well, that's not believable. That's true, because it's actually not true, right? And so I think what we see is this allergic reactions to the enthusiasm about cloud computing, and part of the allergic reactions is really has to do with being precise in definitions. And in particular, we think if you lump in most internal data centers, I don't see how you can't avoid these allergic reactions. And I think that the downside of that for those of us who care about cloud computing is a lot of people will just reject all the stuff that's going on there because they just think it's unbelievable. And so we think actually that definition is really pretty important for keeping a credible discussion about what is the what's different about cloud computing versus what we've always been doing.
That makes sense. So you mentioned, and this is one of the questions I want to ask you about, the advantage of these large cloud computing providers having a 5 to 7x economic advantage over an average medium or large-sized corporation. What does that lead to? Does that mean we consolidate in a vacuum to a few, just like the story of 100 automobile companies in the U.S. in the early 1900s and three flailing companies recently?
Hopefully that's not the greatest.
Are there historical precedents? Of my questions that I think about.
Go ahead.
Or is it a different model, more than like the electric grid, where you do consolidate, but you consolidate to several entities that are connected and therefore collaborate with each other depending on the needs and the capacity?
Yeah, I think it's more likely to be utility companies are big companies, right? PG&E is a big company. I don't know that there's only three in the whole world, but I think it makes sense that there's a small number of large companies that we consolidate to. I think that is, we'll see what happens, but that makes sense to me. These economies of scale, as we say in the paper, we think it wasn't that somebody sat down and said they exist. It was the success of Amazon and Google and Microsoft forced them to build these gigantic data centers filled up with commodity units, and then they negotiated for prices and they did sensible things about locating them in low-cost areas and near low-cost power, and I think then negotiating for network bandwidth. And by the time they were all done, people realized they had a huge economic advantage. And then somebody made the leap, maybe people at Amazon made the leap to say, wow, that's so cheap. We could sell this and make a profit. And that, which we believe is what's happened, is if they really are, and it's kind of easier to imagine network bandwidth. Absolutely, network bandwidth. You go negotiate, for a gigabit per month or 100 megabits per month. That's going to be a lot cheaper per megabit than if you negotiate for 10 megabits per month. I think nobody argues about that. And so that factor of 5 or 7 there, just on network bandwidth, which is pretty important, they can an Amazon can sell that at a profit below your costs, right? And that's what we think is one of the reasons people are excited about the cloud computing. I can outsource this thing, and it is arguably as cheap, or maybe it's even cheaper than doing it yourself.
Yeah, I think it. The cost savings and the way that works is pretty dramatic. So one other thing along the lines of cost savings is we talk a lot about commodity hardware. What does that exactly mean to you? Is it just that it's the x86 architecture? Are blade servers a commodity? I mean, they tend to be pricier and have custom fittings. There's hundreds of thousands of 1, 2, 3, 4U server configurations. Does that mean they're all – what's the glue or the commonality for commodity?
Yeah, I think it's I think Google really pioneered incredibly low cost. It seemed like if they could, according to the folklore, they built things with DRAMs that were broken, right? And they had enough software redundancy to hide the broken DRAMs. And broken DRAMs are really cheap, so they have at this extreme of low cost. But I think I've never been a fan of blade servers in a giant data center. What blade centers were invented originally for the problem was, how do we fit more computers in a small amount of space? So that is clearly not the problem data centers. And data centers is managing the power and cooling today. And when you're building these $100 million buildings, having a little bit bigger floor space does not dramatically change the cost. So I think blade servers, maybe they have some more manageability stuff, but
and they're known to run hotter.
Yeah,
right,
hotter.
Subjective analysis.
Yeah, and a bunch of these, I'm kind of a hardware guy. A bunch of people have built these really tiny racks with 10 or 20 kilowatts. So what do you do when you stick that in a data center? Well, you stick it in, nothing's near it for the next, you put it in a circle of 15 feet and it sits there by itself. So, yeah, I don't think blade centers or blade servers are about to revolutionize the data center. I think they're solving the wrong problem.
So just, any variety of standard rack-mounted server in your mind fits this commodity moniker?
Yeah, is it going to be a 1U box with, a couple of chips in it? Is that the sensible building point? Or is it a 2U box, that has more disks and more DRAM? I'd be surprised if it's a 4U box. But all of these guys are very sensitive It's the rare giant company that's happy to have you wander around their data center and see what they're
right.
doing.
Right.
They're, you know, we did this, I did this textbook with John Hennessy, and early in the Google days, our third edition of the book, they let us go see what was going on at Google, and we document what the state of the art a few years ago. Well, when we next edition, they weren't all that excited
about to have you come back in,
seeing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about a topic that maybe wasn't fully explored in the paper, and it's about components of the cloud. I think Amazon defines their cloud components as a compute component, a storage component, a database component. We at Nervonix, we obviously were in the cloud storage, but we also believe that a different component of the cloud was a CDN or the delivery component way before Amazon launched their CloudFront component. What makes a component? What components are missing? Can you talk a little bit about the components of the cloud, if you will?
I believe based on my ability to call things that this is really going to be a big deal. That's another reason. Why did we write this report? We think cloud computing is a really big deal, and you know, 10 years from now, we'll look back and see that one of these recent years, 2007, 2009, wow, that was really the beginning of the change. So we think that's really a big deal. So right now what's happening, I think, at these early stages of this technology is people are trying things out to see what people want, right? So it seems pretty clearly, if we just talk at Amazon, that the EC2 and S3 has been a big success. We think Elastic Block Server is pretty popular. Not so clear to me that SimpleDB is very popular. We don't use it. I don't know other people. Looks like the CloudFront, that seems like a good idea. So I think it looks like from afar what Amazon's kind of doing is either there's internal advocate, there's things they've been doing internally and they bring it out, or there's something. I know what our customers need, I think, when they try this out. And one of the nice things about the software as a service model, you know, they're the only ones that have this copy, so they can try things out and see what people like. So that's what's going on in Amazon, and of course in Microsoft, and Google have announced their things. I think all of these things are going to be evolving, and you know, that's one of the fun things about this field. We'll get to watch and see what gets popular. In terms of what's missing, which is one of our, that's a real scalable storage, real scalable, you know, petabytes, you know, hundreds of terabytes, petabytes, really easily scalable storage that scales up and scales down. You know, that's one of the things that we say in the report that would be a great opportunity for the future.
Dave, I saw a video that you did discussing the paper on your blog, and you mentioned some strategies for application development and maybe some guidelines for application developers to keep in mind when designing for the cloud. Can you recap a little bit of that?
Yeah. That's also on our website, on our blog, right? The video, which had the faculty involved talking about it. So we think what's really different about the cloud computing is this elasticity, is the scale up and scale down. This is a new challenge for software designers. Software designers have always had, well, scaling up. So that, and that all meant, you know, different customers would have different size machines, or a customer would decide to buy some more hardware and increase it. But, you know, it's at quickest months or weeks maybe. But they've never had scale down. There's never been design your software so that suddenly you can use a lot less. Well, why would that? That would never happen, right? What was going to have a fire? Is it supposed to work? You know, when they, no. So what's really different here is the speed of the elasticity. So it, and you're really rewarded as a software developer scaling up and scaling down, because people trying to use your service in the fallow hours, in the middle of the night, they don't have to pay for it. And that's one of these things that cloud computing or utility computing lets us do that we've never had before. I think kind of the flip side of that kind of horizontal scaling up and down rapidly is it's probably less important to get single node performance. That's, if we look back from the future, that may not be the thing that everybody cares about, is which, you know, classically in software we've always cared about how fast does something run in one node, and spend a lot of time and energy trying to improve it. It may be that the new definition of performance is scalability. It's how quickly can you scale to 10 or 100 times as many nodes, and conversely, how quickly can you scale back down? Is that would be when you're talking about benchmarking. Or this would be this new kind of benchmarking. It'd be more the scaling would be the benchmarking rather than our classical worry about single node performance.
So that's not really happening now, though. Is that
no.
so? Is that
well?
An
you
area
mean that
where,
happy,
I mean, there isn't a. I mean, there's plenty of benchmarking firms that will test, you know, the TCP benchmarks and storage, or the capacity of a switching backplane if you're doing a large Ethernet switch. But I haven't seen this type of benchmarking that you're talking about, of people measuring how quickly can I deploy 100 instances, reduce down to back to 10 instances. Do you know of anybody working on that,
of course,
besides yourselves?
Well, we've got this benchmark that we call Cloudstone, I think is what it's called. And it's an attempt to be a portable benchmark that you could put out there and start doing these experiments. And I think from the RadLab webpage, it talks about that. But I think a reason you don't see this is, you know, this is one of the things we're excited about cloud computing. This is a new idea, right? As you know, before cloud computing was economically viable, and the fact that you could, the pay model was hourly or by the daily, something very small by computing standards. There was no particular reason to be talking about scaling up and down down quickly. So the economics of a charge for use, charge only for what you use rather than kind of lease that you're stuck with it whether you use it or not, this is a new thing. So benchmarking goes a long way in computing, and always it's been about single component or single computer thing. So that's not surprisingly that's been done. So this will be a new challenge out there. You know, so if somebody announces a new scalable storage thing like we talked about, that the figure of merit be won't how fast is it compared to Oracle on a single node? It'll be, well, how quickly can it go up to 1,000 instances, right? And can it scale down? A lot of storage things is not designed to scale way back. Maybe get bigger, but not quickly get smaller.
Well, storage is one of the few areas of infrastructure that's persistent.
Yeah.
And so I think because of that, it needs a different framework or different lens by which you adjust it. And, you know, for example, organizations love deploying new applications. And there's always deploying new applications, but nobody ever talks about reducing applications because it's hard. Nobody wants to be that administrator that shuts down an application one day and the phone rings and somebody says, oh, I haven't used that in 2 years, but I wanted to use it today. What happened?
Well, this scaling was more, I was talking about, that's a good point, but I was talking more like a larger service that would sometimes you'd be using, you know, 3 nodes and sometimes be using 1,000 nodes.
Right. Yeah, I understand. It's just I think that the removing data from an organization is difficult.
But in scaling, it's kind of, I was talking about all of these systems to make themselves be fast and dependable have lots of replicas of data.
Okay.
So this would be, you know, how many replicas do you need? Can you, you know, as your load decreases, you need some number of replicas for dependability, but a lot of the replicas are there for performance. Can you make those go away when you don't need them?
Right. Right. That makes a lot of sense. So do you have any predictions for some new applications that we might see putting your future hat on of, you know, now that we have cloud computing?
That's a tough one. I saw that you forwarded me that question. I don't know that technologists are very good at applications. I think, you know, we'll be doing the same applications over again. I think the interest, kind of the process, though, in talking to people who talk to people, venture capitalists, there's probably no startup company in software that's building their own data center. I think if you were to say, I think what we're going to do is build our own data center, you would not get funding. So it's like 100% are using one of these cloud service providers. So, you know, kind of, I don't know what the applications they're coming up with, but there are these lots of smart young people in the world trying to come up with new ways to use this technology, and they're all more or less using software as a service, because software as a service, a lot easier to build software as a startup company when you're the only one running it, and all deploying it on cloud computing, because, you know, big companies may be a little worried about what could happen, but from a startup's perspective, there's so many things they have to worry about that worrying about Amazon going out of business is way down their list. So I think we'll see a whole generation of software innovators all deploying on cloud computing.
You guys are immersed in cloud computing technologies every day, day in and day out. What are some of the technical problems that you find that could possibly have business benefits? What is it that you wake up or go to bed at night thinking, geez, I wish this was solved, and look at how many people would benefit from this?
Yeah, You're giving a lot of credit to academics. you know, in the, what are we doing in the Rad Lab? What we're doing in the Rad Lab is, you know, we're teaching, because we're at a university, we're teaching Ruby on Rails courses to undergraduates, specifically because we think they're more likely to come up with novel uses of technology than we are. So, and what's amazing about the Ruby on Rails stuff is it's so productive that, you know, a Berkeley junior or senior can come in with the idea and with two or three of his or her friends come up with this application and actually build it and deploy it. In fact, we did this last semester. They deployed an EC2 S3 and, you know, we could scale it a little bit and stuff. And so what did they come up with? They came up with things that mattered in their lives. One was a kind of like a gossip site, I think I would have called it. And who's hot and who's not on campus. It wouldn't be something that I would use. another one was much more heart-rendering. They're trying to help medical records for an African country, and they actually deployed a medical record system in a boarding school in an African country in Senegal, I think, in the middle of this class. Another one that they cared about was they really hate our way that we sign up for courses at Berkeley, so they made their own version, and that kind of makes me point. And these things are, you just can't believe the user interfaces of these things. They're kind of snappy and interesting, good design. So our approach is enable the young people and teach them the technology and see what they come up with. But yeah, I don't think we're going to come up with ideas.
Let me ask you another question that is hopefully actionable by our audience. What are the ways that are, and you know, anyone in your audience, business or otherwise, can interact with the Rad Lab?
Well, we have, you know, we've got our website, which has all our papers and stuff like that. We actually have, besides these companies that are major supporters of Google and Microsoft and Sun, we've got an affiliates program where we've got, like you said, many of the companies that are on your report. I think it may be a dozen companies altogether are affiliates, including, you know, IBM and HP's, but also Facebook's and Amazon Web Services is a member. There's a whole bunch of companies. That's a way. It's basically, it's kind of support of graduate school is the way of thinking about it. And then, of course, we're anxious to get our technology used, so we make our papers and software available and stuff like that.
Great. Well, I think that's a perfect way to end the show today. So one of the final sections that I like to do every show is a thing called Cloud Tips, where we pick a consumer-facing or business-facing cloud-based application or company other than your own to share with listeners. So just little tips and tricks to share all the cloud fun activities. So my pick for this week is an online presentation and screen sharing tool called DimDim, D-I-M-D-I-M. I know it has a funny name. But I used to use a tool called TeamSlide, which was ultra-lightweight. Load up your PowerPoint and just converted everything to JPEGs. Didn't require a download because I'm a really big, I'm not a fan of some of the popular heavy tools there. And I haven't used DimDim extensively, just a couple times, but so far it seems great. So for those looking for a simple online screen sharing and presentation, I'd highly recommend it. Edgar, any cloud tips for this week?
Haven't finished a vendor selection process for a blog. Services. I have become a fan of WordPress.com and also the original .org. You're talking to my own blogmaster, so
a recent convert. Good. Dave, anything?
I can't think of the name. I'll try and forward it to you. But okay. Here in the Rad Lab, we have these meeting rooms with giant whiteboards, and so it's our high tech way of keeping track of these. Well, we take out our cell phone and take a picture of it. There is a company that has kind of automated that, and I'll get a graduate student to tell me what the name is. But you take the picture, and it'll automatically index it and do optical character recognition.
I knew that, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, it works amazingly well.
And you find that the cell phone camera, what cell phone are you using?
Well, what do you think? I'm using an iPhone.
Well, I didn't want to be presumptuous.
No, but it's because it's text on a whiteboard.
The contrast is enough?
Yeah, and you know, there's even Photoshop stuff that does this. But this particular software catalogs all the images, automatically does the OCR for you,
and
helps index it and stuff like that. And it was really
so
cheap.
So we don't have that on the audio, but we'll have it in the show notes.
Okay, I'll find it.
Great, great. I more and more use my digital camera to just take a snap after the meeting, and that thing has become as much a tool as it is a fun entertainment thing for family photos and travel photos and such.
Yeah, I remember thinking, I'll never use a phone and a camera. And I was wrong.
There's a whole bunch of new stuff I think we'll see when we get better lenses in those cameras. But certainly the iPhone has, I think, taken the charge with that. Great. Well, at this point, I'd like to wrap up. Thanks, Edgar, for co-hosting today. And Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Do you want to let us know the best place for people to follow up on your side?
Yeah, the website, I'm sorry, the blog site is, I think it's just above the clouds at abovetheclouds.cs.berkeley.edu. And I think the website for the Rad Lab is just radlab.cs.berkeley.edu.
Great, and we'll have that in the show notes for everyone. So thanks again to our audience for listening today. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us with any comments, suggestions, ideas for future guests or anything else on your mind at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. Thanks again. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.